Welcome to the Talk Over Podcast, a conversational platform for the DJs, by the DJs, brought to you by Double and Stylus.
Swag.
Tune in every week to hear us talk about all the things we see, hear and experience as DJs. Don't forget to subscribe to the channel at youtube.com/talkover or follow the Talk Over Podcast page on Spotify.
So today we are in London at Pirate Studios. Big shout out to Pirate Studios. This place is pretty dope, to be fair. We finally got in, Stars and Double, for a special edition of the Talk Over Podcast. And we have a special guest with us today. We've got a couple of special guests joining us today, but first, man like Nick Bright, the voice of radio.
Yeah, I need
voice
some sound
of television.
Gas it.
Come on. I'll have a couple of smashes in there and that.
Yeah, I wouldn't say this chair's mad creaky, by the way, so just like I thought I'd let everyone know. I wouldn't necessarily say the voice of TV, not just yet. You know, maybe I'm aspiring to get
where,
there.
What have I heard you on?
Probably
run some stuff down for us, bro. Where can we hear this voice?
It's probably the one that I'm going to say that you've been hearing most at the moment is probably the Love Island and Ministry of Sound album.
I've heard about this. I was talking to someone.
I hold my hands up.
Yeah. No, I was talking to someone yesterday from Ministry of Sound, funnily enough, and they said about
it went number one.
Because I didn't realise, but Sony bought the label.
Yeah.
And now Sony are pushing out the compilations. Love Island, Ministry of Sound.
So it's Ministry of Sound and Love Island present The Pool Party.
Oh, look, that's the voice right there, yes.
Bang.
Oh, my gosh.
Listen, book me direct.
Do you watch it?
Nah, bruv. I watched about 4 episodes. My housemate watches it.
Okay.
And
Mike?
Yeah,
do you watch it?
Yeah, he loves it, man.
I'd have to get there. I'd have to get
him on blast. I was about to say,
baiting him on the podcast. But yeah, he watched it. So I've seen a few things. Like, is it Samira? Everyone's
Yeah.
You don't watch it, Double?
No,
I don't watch TV, mate. I watch Game of Thrones. And that's me, basically.
That's it. That's what his new look is then, yeah?
Yeah.
I ain't seen this guy for so long, yeah? He had no hair and no beard. Now look at him.
It's extra long today, to be fair. But when you walked in, I was like, this guy is just bald off the scene of Braveheart or something.
My guy's looking like, you know, he should be in the King of the North.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Winterfell.
That's it, man.
So yeah, I am a fan of Love Island. I hold my hands up. I watch it only because the wifey wrote me in.
And yeah, that old chest.
And it's can't, more, no, you can't
nah,
use flatmates.
It's more of a banter thing.
You can't use flatmates and wives for an excuse for this, man.
It was a banter flex, to be fair. I was watching it just to like laugh and like to shout obscenities at the.
And then you got sucked in. Them ones,
yeah,
ain't
man.
It?
And then before I knew it, I was like, I actually like these some of these guys.
That's what happens sometimes, though. You watch it, you're like, this is shit. This is rubbish. I'm not into this. Blah. And then like 3 episodes in, you're like. So yeah, what's happening with Josh?
He definitely watched it, man. The name references.
I didn't watch. I just know he got to the final. Him and Kaz.
Yeah, that's the one. I didn't know he was a presenter before he. So he does presenting anyway. I didn't think they would put people in there that already had like that public
bro
image,
come on,
you know what I mean?
Man, don't be naive.
Yeah, I wasn't sure, man. I thought
Love Island.
It's not even on
Danny
island.
Danny Dyer. Come on.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Previously though, they've not gone down that route. Like, it's just been.
You say that, but most people on those reality TV shows now are like Instagram famous anyway. Like you go on their Insta before they're even in there and it's like, you know, they're like fitness models or some shit, you know.
I did decal some of the Instagrams and like all the girls had like mad numbers and that. Like,
Instagram famous.
Insta famous, which is not real life, obviously.
Yeah, that's a whole, that's a weird thing for me, Insta famous.
You're on the gram, mate. You're
no,
active.
I am on the gram. I'm far from Insta famous though, mate. I'm just bubbling away doing my thing. Like
but that is a thing now though, like within the media landscape, like, you know, within my career I've seen it change quite a lot, like, and I ain't even been in it that long. I started on radio in 2010, so it's like 8 years, but even in that time things have changed so much. Like, we all know now as DJs, we all know that the first place that people go to check your credentials is not even Mixcloud. It's not even SoundCloud. It's not even to check whether you're good at DJing.
It's true.
They're straight on the gram. They're straight on Twitter. They're straight on Facebook or whatever, just to see your numbers.
Even from a fan level, if I'm DJing in the club and someone's enjoying what I'm doing, they won't come up and say, "Oh, have you got a Mixcloud? Have you got a SoundCloud?" More times they'll say, "Have you got Snapchat or have you got an Instagram?"
Yeah,
and that's where they boom. That's where they join. Suddenly now they're part of the brand through that.
But that's why numbers now are currency. First of all, your social numbers are currency, but like people can like fake the currency, which is what a lot of people are doing because because it enables you to get jobs at the end of the day, you know what I mean? It puts you above other people. But also, people want to follow people that are famous, you know? Like, so if, like you say, a fan, if someone in a club or, you know, somebody hears you on radio, but then they go and check out your Insta and you ain't got, you know, this amount of people following you, some people are like, oh, well, I don't really want to follow you. The analogy that I always use as DJs, so again, the good thing to say is, like, when you're a DJ and you're playing in a club and it's empty, we've all done it, how many times do you see people walk through the door of the club, see it's empty and walk straight back out?
Even
if you're playing bangers, bruv, they don't care. If it's empty, they don't want to come to your party. So it's the same thing, you know what I mean? Social media is like, is that. If they come on your page and it ain't popping, they're like, oh no, fuck that, I don't want to see that.
I think that's crazy, what's forced a lot of, like, you see a lot of DJs out there, like we touched on it before on previous ones, people buying the numbers for that reason, because they want people to come and lock into their gram and instantly have that, like, gratification, like to be able to lock the people down with the numbers in it.
The thing is with the numbers thing, right, is that a lot of people criticise that kind of area, people buying numbers and blah, blah, blah. I don't want to criticise it because I understand why people do it.
Yeah.
Like, because at the end of the day, people want to work. Like, people want to prosper in this career. And it's quite hard, you know what I mean? Especially now, you know, the difference between now and before is, say, you know, the Tim Westwood or Trevor Nelson, I like to use them as an example because they've been in the game for a long time. When they came into the game, they could get tunes before anybody else.
Yeah.
They would have stuff on import months on vinyl before anybody could get near it. So they could stand out by doing that straight away. And they're on radio.
Literally, like, sometimes 6 months as well. You hear something on Westwood 6 months before anyone else has it.
Yeah. Whereas now... I'm on radio, like, I'm on One Extra, but I got the same tunes that you've got. I got the same tunes that you've got, Stylist. You, us three have got the same tunes that, you know, DJ Dave in his bedroom has got. We've all got the same tunes. So to stand out now is more difficult. So what people are doing is they're trying to do more with social media, whether that be get bigger numbers so they can say, look at me, look how many numbers I got. I should be playing at your club. Or they're being more creative with Instagram stories, videos, whatever it is. But the easy win for them is to buy followers because it's
a lazy way to do it as well.
It's the quick fix of it, man.
You know, I saw actually the other day on Facebook, first time I've ever seen this, won't be the last and it's going to get worse, job applications for a club, and it said you must have 5,000 followers on Instagram, 3,000 on Facebook. That was the credentials.
Is that real?
100%,
oh,
I promise
my
you.
Lord.
5,000 Instagram
guys.
Followers, 3,000 Facebook friends if you want the job. And I think it must have been like a promotion.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's terrible, but it doesn't surprise me because, like, I've been approached in the past about DJ bookings and, like, they come to you about a booking, but then they say, but we need you to sell tickets as well.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I'm not a ticket seller, I'm a DJ. Like, you know, you wouldn't say to an accountant, come and do my books, but also you got to be a barista. It's like, bruv, like, I'm a DJ, you know what I mean? Like, I'm coming to play the tunes. Like, so, and the thing is, that started, before I got on One Extra, I was DJing just in clubs and in my bedroom and stuff like that. And I went to Malia for two seasons, 2007, 2008. I'd done the whole season in Malia. And that stuff was going down there. Ticket sellers, they were expecting DJs to be ticket sellers on the beach during the daytime, just walking up and down the beach, and then coming DJ at nighttime. And just even from then, I was like, I don't really want to do that.
It was the same in Napa. Napa 09, I think it was. Similar story.
Yeah.
I didn't know you did two seasons out there. Full summer.
Stretching it out. 2007, played at Camelot Castle. That's where I met a lot of people, actually, because Camelot Castle in 2007 was the main club that booked people.
Yeah.
So, like, I spent my 21st birthday with Tim Westwood. that was mad. He was like, damn, baby, shout out my boy Nick Bright. Damn, 21, baby, let's go.
Yes.
I know a lot of DJs that go down that route when they're first starting out. I never did the seasons abroad.
I did.
I loved it, man. Like, it
was... say that's a good thing to do for, like, aspiring DJs coming up.
It's hard.
100%.
Get the hands dirty.
You know why I think it was a beautiful thing for me? I did my first overseas booking in Kos in Greece in 2007. Literally went on holiday, took my laptop, got drunk one night, and said to a bar owner, shit you not, it's the truth, I was so drunk, I said to him, if you let me DJ in your bar tomorrow night, it'd be the best DJ set you've ever heard. Arrogant as fuck, but I was drunk, right?
The confidence. The
worst thing is, I was like, you don't even have to pay me. So anyway, he gave his DJ the night off, I went in and did it, and by chance, the owner of the biggest club on the island happened to be sat in, like, the bar opposite or something, heard my set, and was like, come and play in the club tomorrow night. So that was where I was like, okay, yeah, cool, but you got to pay. And anyway, so I did that. End of that set, they took my details, and during the winter, they said, can you be our resident for 2008? So went out and did the whole summer.
Yeah.
The thing for me, the massive, huge change in my career was that season, because it was the biggest club on a commercial resort. Suddenly, up until this point, I'm just a hip-hop and R&B DJ, and dancehall as well, of course. But now I'm in a big club. This place, like 1,500 capacity. And 2008, you know, when David Guetta was running things. Yeah, so now I'm having to learn how to mix house.
Dance, R&B and tunes, and
it was, well, it was 2008.
Akon,
that was
Sexy Bitch. And
that exact year. And it was, that was when I had to...
2008 was Kid Cudi Day and Night.
Day and Night, I think that was the biggest one on the island.
2007 summer. Was Heartbroken. Trust me, because I do it by Malia.
Yeah, it was Day and Night.
We're also in our age here, guys.
Day, and I think Flo Rida Low was around there as well.
Flo Rida Low was 2008 as well.
Yeah, like, so and so that was where I learned...
Why Are You Wearing My Rolex, 2008.
Yeah. And that was where I learned to mix house. I've got exactly the same memories.
When you work in these clubs, he's telling the truth, because in a lot of these clubs, like, it's free entry as well. In the clubs that we were playing in anyway, like second year 2008, we played in a place called Apollo.
Mm-hmm.
And in Apollo, it's free entry. So it's like you play one tune, people don't like that, out the door to the next place.
Proper.
Like Camelot was different, because it was like people paid to go there, because that was the premier club, as in like it booked people.
They bought the tickets, they were committed, yeah.
Booked people, they're in. We DJ'd the phone party, they paid for the tickets, they're in.
He knows the struggle.
The phone party was crazy, though, I'm not going to lie.
Apollo's like the main spot there now. I just played there like two weeks ago, me and Woola,
I'm not even gassing it. Me and Woola made it the main spot in 2008, and that's not even gas. When we went there in 2008, Billy, the owner, did you meet Billy?
No, it's a guy called Stefanos now. I think you might have changed over.
No, I think Billy's Billy still runs it, like, because I'm friends with him on Facebook. But anyway, he had 12 DJs, right? 12 DJs to be in there, and it was like a fucking reality TV show, brother. Every night for about 2 weeks, someone was getting sacked, and it was like survival of the fittest.
Wow.
And then me and Woola were the remaining two, because we were a duo. So like, he used to do most of the DJing, and I used to gas it on the mic.
Yeah,
like we had a thing in it, and like we were there, and we kept it busy. And then one time Billy came to us and he's like, I want you to play house music, I want to change the image, I want it to be house music. So we played house music one night, the club was empty, and then he was like, just do what you do, go back to doing what you do. So then we went back to playing hip hop and R&B, and it was rammed again. And then we didn't go back in 2009. He wanted us to go back, but we didn't go back. But since that year, like, Apollo's been crazy. Yeah, it's right crazy, in the middle, man, of the strip as well. Yeah, That's the thing, the location of it is...
I'm not even sure Castle's... I think they only open like one night a week
now.
Yeah,
it's right at the top.
Like Apollo, that chunk in the middle is where all the action is.
Well, yeah, to go back to your question, I would say, really, as a training ground, an overseas residency, if you can get it, imperative for the DJ.
It's also, you know, I was playing 7 nights a week.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's like 7 nights a week for like 10 weeks intense. In a row as well.
It ain't this, like, you know, now is different, because if I get booked to do something, I'll do an hour, maybe 2 hours. But like back then it was all night.
Yeah.
You know, all night, 7 nights a week. And I went out there on the 29th of April. And didn't come back until halfway through September.
Yeah.
So I'm there like all year. Well, you hungry? What was that?
Yeah.
Was that your belly?
I thought that was your stomach.
Wow.
Right, she's hungry, you know what I mean?
I didn't even hear that still.
The long summer graft. So through your journey, right, you've had quite an interesting one, because, and this is going to sound condescending as fuck, and I don't mean it to, but I said earlier, like, you and I met because you would work for RSI doing the Undisputed things, and you were like the warm-up DJ. Yeah. You and Mike would do the early hours for the events.
Yeah.
And then, literally, in my memory, it seemed like I met you and you were the warm-up guy for Undisputed. And like a year later, you got a show on One Extra.
So what happened for
just
me?
Just like that.
It was, you know what? It wasn't even in London either. I'll point that out, because it was down Southampton way.
Did you work there originally?
I'll give you a quick history. So back then, when I was doing warm-ups for RSI, for Undisputed.
Big up Ricky, by the way, and Eno.
I was on a radio station in Portsmouth called Express FM with Mike, who I call Woola. His name's Mike Woola. We still live together now, in fact. But me and him, we were on Express FM doing our thing on there, doing a Friday night UK music show. And then we met Ricky, RSI, in Malia, I think. Malia 2007, we met him. So then the kind of in between 2007 and 2008, that's when I would have met you when we were doing warm-ups. Because we were playing in like Swindon, because he used to run Twice as Nice.
Swindon, that's right. Yeah. He franchised Twice as Nice, which is how I got involved.
We were playing Swindon, Bournemouth, Southampton, like basically south of England. Mm-hmm. Never really played in London. But at the same time as doing that, I was at uni now. I started uni in London doing a radio production degree at University of Westminster. When I was at uni, I decided I want to start working at One Extra. Now, to go back to an earlier part of the story that I was saying, when I was in Camelot Castle Club in Malia 2007, I met Westwood, Cameo, bare people that worked at One Extra, DJs at One Extra. And then I just used the fact that I knew these guys now to get in the door at One Extra. So whilst working with Ricky doing the DJing and being at uni doing radio production and knowing Cameo, I hollered at Cameo and said, can I come in and do some stuff on your show? And he said, yeah, I need someone to come and film freestyles on my show.
Right, okay.
So then I went in. This is now. So now I'm at uni, right? So I'm trying to do uni in the day, and then on Tuesdays I'm going into Cameo's show, filming, turning around that video, uploading it to his channel all on the same night. So I wouldn't get to sleep until like 5 in the morning, because he shows to finish at 1. Then like, this is olden days as well. It weren't easy to get footage off of the camera.
Yeah.
Rendering it into Final Cut used to take like hours. Most of the time you're just sitting there waiting for the render. Yeah. You know what I mean? You'd move the video like 2 centimeters and it's like render. Like the it was a nightmare. So like, I'm sitting there. I used to go sleep at like 5, 6, get up, go uni the next day. And I used to do that for ages, and then eventually people noticed the hustle, and I managed to get a job at One Extra. This is quite a long story, but I'm condensing it down. I managed to get a job at One Extra in production, working on different people's shows.
So was that directly for the BBC or through one of the production companies that they have?
No, so I went direct through the BBC. So what you mean is like a lot of independent production
like something
companies
else,
produce content for the BBC. So all of the specialist shows on One Extra, so all of them, bar a couple, like they're all produced by something else. Or, you know,
something else is the name of a company.
That's who done my talent stuff, innit? They were sourcing all that as well.
So there's a few. There's Something Else, there's Grape, there's TBI. Mm-hmm. These are all independent production companies.
So you were now working as a... So what was the role? Broadcast assistant?
Yeah, so my first role at the BBC was a broadcast assistant, BA. Right. So that's like... Back in the day, there used to be a producer on One Extra. This is, it's different for different networks. Mm-hmm. But for One Extra, there'd be a producer... And then a BA, no assistant producer.
Right.
And then eventually it changed. They got rid of BAs. BAs don't exist now. Okay. There's 3 roles now. So it's like producer, assistant producer, and then a TA, which is just like a team assistant.
Literally get
the T. The T
assistant.
No, they're an integral part of the team. They're not in the studio with you. So it's like your producer
and
AP.
They're on the computer just outside.
Yeah. They're the guys who sit outside kind of like putting phone calls through, like stuff like that. So yeah, I was a BA and I was working on Mr. Jam's show. That's the first show that I worked on. So big up Jam. And like it was through working on his show, he rated me highly. Because at first I was just covering people when they were off and that. And then like, because he liked me on the show.
So you were covering as a presenter or as
a producer? No, still in production here.
Right, okay.
And because he liked me and he knew I was a DJ and I had like musical knowledge. Like, because the mad thing is, right, you might be surprised at hearing this or if you're watching this, that... There's a lot of people that try to come and work at One Extra and the BBC who don't know shit about music. They come there and it's like they don't know about the industry, they don't know about the scene. They just come there because they were fans of the station.
Which
is cool, but like I'm like, you've got to have a little bit more.
Yeah.
And for me, like I knew, like I come from, like I might not look like I'm wearing like a flowery shirt, you know what I mean? But I know, I've been doing this shit a long time. Like I know about this stuff, you know what I mean? I've been DJing since I was 13 and like I got, name a grime tune, I got it on White Label, you know what I mean? Okay. Like I used to buy all my shit from Rhythm Division, like, you know, UK Record Shop, everything. Like, so like Mr. Jam knew that right away when I worked on his show. From there, he went to the management and said like, you should give this guy a job. The management came to me and were like, they pulled me aside and were like, we
want to offer you. So effectively, Mr. Jam co-signed you to...
Yeah, pretty much. Like he never lets me forget it though. Like if he sees this, he'll laugh about it. Like, every time I see him, he's like, if it wasn't for me, you wouldn't be working here. I'm like, alright, yeah, I know. Like, but like I gotta big him up, you know what I mean? Because he did really help me in my career, like to get it on track. So like eventually I ended up getting the job at the BBC, so I'm working there full time on Jam's show. whilst trying to do my uni degree. I'm still in my third year at uni now.
Right.
It's mad. I'm not really going uni, but I still managed to get 2-1. So it's
so you're in a paid job at this point?
Yeah, yeah. I'm working. I'm doing the job. I'm doing the job now that a lot of people want to get when they finish my course. So I was like, well, I'm not going to pass up this opportunity. You know
what
I
mean? Standard.
And then I did that, and Jam used to talk to me on air. Like, he used to get me to, like, just read out texts, or, like I said, because I know about music, we'd chat about music. And then the management heard it, they liked it. And the weird thing is, right, even though I said to you guys I was on Express FM, doing a show on Express FM, once I got a job at the BBC, I didn't really want to be a presenter. It's not really something that I was trying to do. Yeah, yeah, like, not at all. And I'd never once said to anybody at the BBC, like, I want to be a presenter. Like, I was just happy to be working. I've been listening to One Extra since it started, 2002. Yeah, I was there from when it started as a fan. So to just be working there was, like, a gas. Like, people that I listen to, like Trevor Nelson, Rampage, Cameo, they're all my colleagues now. It was crazy. And then, yeah, like, off the back of them hearing me talking on air, Rebecca Frank, who was the, she's left now, but she was the editor of the show, she came to me one day and was like, it sounds really strong. Like, I think you should put a demo in. And then a lot of people, when they record pilots and demos for the BBC or for One Extra, they have a producer assigned to them. They do it as if it's a real show,
blah, blah, blah.
But I didn't need any of that. So one day after my shift finished at like 11 p.m., I just went in the next studio and just did a little thing.
Just did it.
Did an hour on my own, just like... It's like the best way for me to describe it is I was signposting, man. That's what they call it in radio. So I was just like playing a tune. And if it was like a hip hop tune, I'd be like, if you like stuff like this, Semtex's show. Demonstrating your knowledge of the schedule, but also like how you sound and your knowledge of the music. Some people overthink demos massively. Thing is with a demo, right, is people don't want to hear... People want to hear it's good right away, but they don't want to hear you like overcomplicating it with like lumbersome features and stuff like that. They don't want to hear that. They just want to hear how you sound. Okay. And they want to hear your knowledge of the schedule, knowledge of the station that you're trying to pitch to. So I'd say that's important if anyone out there is thinking about doing a demo for any radio station.
Where were you two years ago, bro?
Me and Double both done pilots over the years, man.
I've still got my pilot somewhere, man. Like, and I listen to it sometimes just to hear the difference between then and now. Like, my voice sounds mad different, for starters. Like, I feel like when you're on radio... Well, yeah, when you're on radio, because you're using your voice so much, I feel like it gets deeper and deeper and deeper where it's like getting burnt out. It's just getting ripped. I need to get it insured like J-Lo and her ass, you know what I mean? But yeah, anyway, as I was saying, cutting a long story short, this is a mad long story.
Nah,
but,
it's cool, man.
I did the demo, gave it to Rebecca. She liked it. She gave it to Wilbur, who was the boss of One Extra at the time. He liked it. And then he gave it to Ben Cooper, who's now the boss of Radio 1 and One Extra.
Like Ben, you know.
And then next thing I know, I'm getting an email. Remember, I'm a BA now. So when you're a BA, you've got no real reason to chat to Ben, because he's the big boss, you know what I mean? It would be like, you know, being like working on the shop floor in a supermarket and then talking to Mr. Tesco CEO. It just don't happen, you know what I mean? So Ben's sending, well, he's PA, sending me an email saying like, have you got a time to meet with Ben? And I'm thinking, shit,
come to the top floor.
What the hell's going on? Like, then I got called for this meeting in the Radio 1 and One Extra boardroom. I'm sitting there, and like, Ben's right in front of me, and then Wilbur's sitting behind me making notes for everything I'm saying. I'm panicking. Like, I ain't been in a scenario like this ever.
That's intense, man.
I'm not from the corporate world, you know what I mean? And then the next thing I know, Ben stands up at the end of the meeting, and he's like, I want to offer you a show on One Extra, like, early breakfast show, 6 days a week, pre-recorded. So when I first started in 2010...
6 days a week, yeah, sick.
It was 6 days a week, but it was voice tracked, so the show wasn't live. None of the shows were live.
So what did you do? Just record links and then they put them in?
Like commercial radio vibe. So just links with Carol Berry, my first ever producer. Like, big up Carol.
No one forgets their first producer.
No one forgets their first.
Big up Amy. Yeah.
Started on a 6 day a week show. Was that intense? That obviously pre-rec though.
That's the thing. It weren't so bad. But at the time, I was still working in production. Mm-hmm. So by now, I've moved off of Mr. Jam Show and I'm working on all the specialist shows. This is before,
as a BA.
Yeah. So this is before the specialist shows were produced by independents. Right. They used to be produced by the BBC. So Semtex, Ronnie Harrell, Robbo Ranks, Cameo, Bailey, all of those like drum and bass, hip hop, all the genre shows. And I'm working two in the afternoon until 10 at night, on the shows, and then in the morning I'm coming in 9 a.m. pre-recording two shows with Carol and then going straight through. So it's like, that was intense. And then to make the full leap and to complete the story, Fridays Ben Cooper came to me and he said, I want to give you 6 weeks Friday early breakfast show live. So early breakfast show on One Extra was 4 till 7, so 3 hours before Trevor Nelson and Gemma doing the breakfast show. So now I'm on before Trevor Nelson, who's like an idol who I've listened to since ever, bruv. Like, watched Man on the Lick. Still looks the same as well.
Still
looks,
yeah,
he needs to bring out a flipping moisturising cream. Trust me, people will buy that shit.
Man's care range, innit?
Trust me.
He looks the same he looked 20 years ago.
So it's really interesting what you said, because I want to pick up on a few parts of your story where, firstly, like, we started out with a very similar story with the overseas stuff.
Yeah.
And a key thing, I think, as well, to put out to new DJs going back to doing the overseas things, you mentioned about how you managed to spend time, like your birthday, you spent it with Westwood and that. This is something I noticed. Being abroad is so much more relaxed. That was actually where I met Westwood as well. And then where I met Cameo. We must have just been on the same on the same tour, just different destinations.
Yeah, definitely.
Cameo, Target, Westwood.
Heartless Crew as well. They were in
a new Heartless before then. But my point is actually, like, there were instances where...
it makes it easier to connect with these people, isn't it, when you're in the holiday vibe.
But as the main resident for the club that I was at, and that was the club that was booking everyone, it was my responsibility to go and pick the DJs up, make sure they get fed, so take them for dinner, so, and tell them about the club, tell them about, do you know what I mean? So that's where you actually get to spend that time.
Yeah.
It's not in England, so everyone's just calm. Like, yeah, so that's true. There's that's me true. And Cameo just sat down, and me and Westwood just sat down having a meal, chatting about the resort, the music, etc. So you do get to build those relationships, and then, because it's not in England, like I say, you spend longer with them, and the relationships there.
It's a business that's built on relationships, man. Let's be 100%. Honest. Like, you know, and there's DJs out there, you know, big up Martin Too Smooth, who, you know, will
the
be able to
be able to
tell you more about relationships than me. But, like, I can tell you just from my experience, meeting people is so important. See, I think that's the difference, because, like, I was trying to get a job at One Extra just any way
at
I
One
could.
Extra.
Yeah, yeah. And I, like I said, I'm being genuine when I say that I wasn't trying to be a presenter there. Even though I was on Express FM as a presenter, that was just a hobby. I was always like, you guys know what it's like, man. I was always like, oh, that's the dream, but that ain't going to happen to me. Like, I ain't going to get a show on One Extra. Don't forget, One Extra, these people were like celebs to me.
I listened to that from
when it launched. So, like, the idea that I would ever be on there as a presenter was like, nah, man, it's not going to happen to me. Like, and I'm not even saying that as a defeatist. I just wanted to try and be real with it because I didn't want to be disappointed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the fact that I was working there was enough for me. I just, like, wanted to, you know, I was seeing Treble T and Mike Anthony every day, you know.
Shouts to Rampage,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, like,
I love them
guys. The best show,
I love them,
bro,
guys.
That show,
them early days of One Extra, like, it's just seen that there was way more freedom with what was being broadcast.
I was seeing Ace and Viz every day.
Yeah,
you know
cool.
what I mean? Like, the Ill Out show on Channel U, I used to watch that as well. Like, and now I'm seeing these guys every day. I was happy about that, you know what I mean? So, and then, like, I did kind of think to myself, oh, you know, well, now that I'm in, maybe I can... It wasn't necessarily even like a, now that I, maybe I can get on air thing. It was like, now that I'm in, maybe I can DJ for these guys in their club nights, whatever. I was more so like thinking about
it's
it
not
like
so
that.
Much out of reach anymore. You're because you're already in the building kind of thing. So
there's that, but also I know what it's to get on air. There's powers that be that need to give you an opportunity. Yeah. Blah. But I was just thinking like, you know, maybe I can like DJ with Rampage. You know, maybe I can. Like, I was just thinking like externally more than the BBC. But then, you know, it happened the other way around for me. And I you know, I know what it's like. It's right place, right time, man. It's all
time
very much
key,
that.
Man.
You still have to be good at what you do. Yeah, like, don't get me wrong. If I was crap, I wouldn't still be on now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, like, you have to be good at what you do, but also be in the right place at the right time. And I understand completely that I was very much in the right place at the right time. But I put myself in that position at the same time as well. You know, I worked my ass off. But in the story that I told you like earlier, I cut out loads of bits. I was applying for jobs at the BBC for a long time. It didn't just happen. So, but I just persevered with it. I kept going, applying for the jobs. And then eventually what happened is I got an interview. And once you have an interview, if you're unsuccessful, which I was again, because again, one of the things I always tell people, man, is you have to keep going. Like,
yeah,
in this
yeah,
industry,
yeah.
you will get told no a million times before you hear yes. And it's like, I, after I got told no from that interview, I requested some feedback, which is like something you can do after you've had an interview. You can get direct feedback from the people that interviewed you. Got that feedback and I said, look, what more do I have to do? And Andy Worrell, who still works there now, he said to me, you just need a bit more experience. So I'm, right. you know, I'm a cheeky guy, man. I was just like, well, can I come in and get some?
And then he
forwarded me on to Dina, who was like head of staffing at that time. And then she was like, yeah, do you want to come in and start helping out on Twin B's weekend show?
Dope.
And then, you know, coincidentally, Twin B's show back then was Saturdays and Sundays 10 to 1, and that's the show that I now present. So the first ever show that I helped out on, I now present that show.
The circle
is
complete.
It's
interesting, though, when you said about other factors, we have a podcast that will never be aired because somebody lost the footage. Where we actually talk about part of our radio
Yeah,
journey.
Your camera's playing up at the minute, I'm not going to lie. Yeah, like,
bro, I don't know what's going on with it. That's never done that before,
acting silent. We don't want to hear these stories.
To be fair, that's never happened, man. As soon as you get Nick in, the shit's piling.
Stylist lost the footage for the episode where we actually talk about our individual journeys towards One Extra. Because at one point, it was both of our goals individually to be on there. I was told when I did a pilot that I wasn't going to be given a show. Because literally, like you, I was like, what else do I need to do? And they said, everything to do with this pilot is spot on. It's perfect. Everything we need, but you're not female. And it was like, that's literally the one thing.
We were piloting around the same period. And it was at the point where they were lacking female.
Chucky's spoken about it as well. I know Chucky's mentioned the same thing.
I got the same feedback.
Well, I mean, I can't sit here and speak for One Extra.
Yeah, man.
But what I can say is that there was a time where the gender imbalance was huge.
I think
we only had two female DJs on the whole network. Mm-hmm. It might have been Sarah Love and Sarah Jane Crawford.
Yeah, that's the one.
They were the only two girls on the network.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I started presenting there.
That's what's happening, man. Wait, that's sick, bro. It's nice to learn about your journey as well. Yeah. Especially there's
That was a full autobiography there, bruv. I didn't know it.
Bruv, I'm taking up bare time. I know you got more podcasts to record today and that.
Yeah, no, it's good
that knowledge.
And especially, like I say, going back to, well, it is 10 years ago now when we first met and seeing you in the early stages for Undisputed and RSI and all them guys and knowing what you've done, but also how you've done it differently to me.
It's wicked coming on a podcast like this, because the mad thing is, even though I'm on One Extra daytime, and it's like I'm on weekends, so a lot of people don't know the background that I have and like the way that I've come out. A lot of people don't even know I can DJ because I don't DJ on my show. Like, but you know, I'm me and Ace, potentially the only DJs on One Extra daytime who can DJ.
Actually DJ.
You know, like not like going to a club and play a couple tunes. I mean, like actually mix and DJ. You know, I'd belt drive turntables. That's where I started. Like, people that can't DJ don't even know.
That's how you know someone's got it. You know they've got techers.
People that can't really DJ but pretend don't even know what belt drive turntables are.
Bro.
So, like,
this could be a completely different episode.
And I'm not saying this stuff to hate, because everyone's got a job that they do. I just want people to know where I've come from. And, like, you know, I just want to demonstrate, and coming on a podcast like this allows me to do that, you know, because I do the TV thing now as well. Like, you know, you might have seen some of the BBC sports stuff that I do. This isn't the podcast to talk about that, so I ain't going to go into detail about it. But like, because of that, again, people are like, oh, well, this guy's not a music fan. But it's like, bruv, I am, trust me.
So
respect for having me down, man.
A bit of an all-rounder, mate. He's got the TV stuff, the radio, his selector, DJ.
I'm trying, man, you know what I mean?
Thing, man. Arsenal. Personal.
I don't know about that though. You know what I mean? Unai
Emery.
Any double, innit?
This guy don't do football. This guy don't do football. And I talk about it, he's like boring.
He's already looking at the mic. He's like,
what's the time? Is that the time really? As soon as the football finishes, mate, I'm putting Love Island on.
Peak.
Dead.
Nick, thank you, bro. Appreciate that.
Nice one, guys, man.
Talk over. Let's go.